We'll just take directly to the verse, although today happens to be, according to our Vaishnav calendar, the appearance and disappearance of various exalted Vaishnava within our Guru Parampara. And we were hearing this morning, we're just coming from Juhu Temple. It is also some special pastime of swimming pastimes, water pastimes of Krishna and Vrindavan. I was not planning to actually be visiting Bombay area. That means I was not planning to visit Chaupati temple also, but Krishna is very kind to arrange a short visit. And generally speaking, most purports given in our Bhagavatam give us an opportunity to speak about practically anything that we feel may be of importance for our audience of devotees to hear. Let's go directly to the verse and then we'll see what Krishna inspires us to. Actually, I've come with it is people, they say sometimes, be careful, this person, he has a hidden agenda. I don't have a hidden agenda. My agenda is very open, and I'll tell you about it in a few minutes. Just try to keep everyone's attention. Just like in Krishna consciousness, in the early days, when we were, you know, newly coming to Srila Prabhupada's movement, there were so many other movements. Still there are various personalities, you know, pushing secret mantras, isn't it? So Prabhupada used to explain, we don't have any secret mantras. Our mantra is open mantra, is accessible, open for everyone. And also we don't have any hidden agendas. Our agendas are are in the open, very clear. So we'll come back to that in a few minutes. On the board we have a verse from the 9th canto, the Srimad Bhagavatam, chapter 22, which is entitled The Dynasty of Puru. So already we get a clue. text number 22. Reto dha putra nayati Naradeva yamakshayat Tvam chasya dhatta garbhasya Satyam aha Shakuntala Reto dha putra nayati. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. O King Dushmanta, he who discharges semen is the actual father, and his son saves him from the custody of Jamaraj. You are the actual procreator of this child. Indeed, Shakuntala is speaking the truth. Purport. Upon hearing the omen, Maharaj Dushmanta accepted his wife and child. According to Vedic Smriti, Punanamno narakad yasmat pitaram trayate sutaha tasmat putra iti prokta svayam eva svayam bhuva. Because the son delivers his father from punishment in the hell called put, the son is called putra. According to this principle, when there is a disagreement between the father and mother, it is the father, not the mother, who is delivered by the son. But if the wife is faithful and firmly adherent to her husband, when the father is delivered, the mother is also delivered. Consequently, there is no such thing as divorce in the Vedic literature. A wife is always trained to be chaste and faithful to her husband, for this helps her achieve deliverance from any abominable material condition. This verse clearly says, putro nayati naradeva yama kshayat, which means the son saves his father from the custody of Jamaraj. It never says putro nayati mataram. Prabhupada. Which means the son saves his mother. I'm still in the purport here. The seed-giving father is delivered, not the storekeeper mother. Consequently, husband and wife should not separate under any condition. For if they have a child whom they raise to be a Vaishnava, he can save both the father and mother from the custody of Jamaraj and punishment in hellish life. Now I'm just coming to the scene. I have not been privileged, like all of you, to have heard all of the previous purports here. And the theme which is being developed in relation to very basic, fundamental, and essential aspect of the Vedic culture, as well as being very, very fundamental and crucial as well to the whole ideology of Varnashrama culture, what is meant to be the permanent relationship. In our Vedic culture, we are especially interested in what is permanent. The word sat means permanent, eternal. When one takes shelter of Guru, that is a permanent relationship established. When one marries, that is meant to be a permanent, at least for this lifetime, relationship. Naturally, as in many sections of the Bhagavatam, we are being introduced, we are being exposed to the very high standards which are actually there in the Vedic culture. Very high standard for brahmanas who have to rule under following certain specific guidelines, non-changing guidelines. The brahmanas likewise have to take up various responsibilities, which is also based on guidelines which are not meant to be changed. The whole system even those who are within the section of Shudra within Varnasrama system are meant to actually develop very important qualities. They're listed actually in the Bhagavatam. If we only read Bhagavad Gita, we come to know of one quality for Shudra, servant. One should be a good servant. But Bhagavatam elaborates and gives some 12 qualities of Shudra. Which means that within the Vedic context, it is also not so easy to become a good Shudra. What to speak of becoming a good Vaishya, a good Kshatriya, or a good Brahmana. So there are standards, just like here, a very... of course, nowadays, it is considered a controversial topic. I don't want to open too many doors of controversy, but it is an important topic, which will not be our main topic that we will discuss this morning, but it is there in the purport. Very nicely elaborated upon as well by one of our great foremost acharyas, Srila Narada Muni, in the seventh canto of the Bhagavatam, when Narada Muni elaborates on the duties and responsibilities of various individuals in different varnas, he goes, after giving that explanation, he gives very important instructions in 5 verses regarding the duty and responsibility of women within society. And naturally, because it is within the Bhagavatam, it is very much consistent with what we are hearing this morning. So this will bring me to my open agenda, as I mentioned before. we have, and this Srila Prabhupada reminded us on numerous occasions, we could say again and again, we have, is right there actually in the introduction of the Bhagavatam, we have a crisis. We are living in modern society in a world of crisis where it is an emergency situation. It is in this mood that Srila Prabhupada took to heart fully the instructions received by his spiritual master, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, as a simple and humble householder. Srila Prabhupada never thought that it would fall upon him. It would fall on his head to take up the mission of his spiritual master. Even before he was initiated, which was some 11, 12, or 13 years after meeting his spiritual master, over 10 years, already so many disciples of Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, they were sannyasis, already sannyasis. So they were senior. They were initiated before Srila Prabhupada. They had already, some of them actually had been brahmachari, and from brahmachari took sannyas, didn't take up householder life. It is not an absolute necessity for prabhus or for men or young men to take up, although in the Vedic culture it is highly recommended, it is expected that women do enter householder life. So Srila Prabhupada never thought it, only as things developed, especially after Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur left, then Srila Prabhupada could understand more and more that no one is taking up that mission. And he could understand that he had to take it up. This mission, we are on a mission, actually. When one is on a mission, one has to be alert. One has to be informed. One has to be also very active. Srila Prabhupada showed by personal example. He was constantly very, very alert to the mission of his spiritual master, alert to the mission of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So this mission was, practically speaking, not understood by the vast majority of Srila Prabhupada's godbrothers. When Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu 500 years ago gave this standing order, Pritibite Yatse Jata Nagara Digram Sarvatra Prachar Hoibe Moranam, every town and village. There, how many towns and how many villages are there all over the world? Has anyone counted? Thousands, isn't it? Hundreds of thousands. So Srila Prabhupada, he would explain that actually that order of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was to be taken literally. No one could actually, no one took it literally. Literally means that Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu expected that every town and village on the planet, not only in India, receive the mercy of the holy name. So only Srila Prabhupada, practically speaking, in those days could understand this. And in due course of time, as we all know, he set forth, went to the West and introduced what we all know today as the International Society for Krishna Consciousness. Now, this mission is going on in different places with its ups and downs because Kali Yuga is also going on very forcefully. It is a kind of ongoing battle between the forces of evil and the forces of what's the opposite of evil? Good. Righteousness, dharma, actually. So I need to speak a little bit about one aspect of this mission which is yet to be properly understood. Not that I have full and complete understanding of it, but some realizations which most of which actually are given directly by Srila Prabhupada. Within our ISKCON society, largely, we have established quite widely many temples in different countries around the world, and that is, we are known. People know us as, they have very nice temples. They chant Hare Krishna all the time, practically. Or whenever we see people used to identify devotees, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna devotees, Hare Krishna people, Hare Krishna movement, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna. Because we are naturally giving emphasis on the holy name. That is how Lord Chaitanya began his movement, inaugurated the Sankirtan movement 500 years ago. That is how Srila Prabhupada also, by chanting Hare Krishna, inaugurated the Hare Krishna movement in the Western world. However, although it is very, very much a reality and very basic also to promoting and establishing the movement of Lord Chaitanya, to have temples, wonderful temples like we have here in Chaupati, with many wonderful devotees. When you have a wonderful temple, when you have wonderful deities, then naturally you'll have wonderful people attracted to become part of this wonderful setting, this wonderful arrangement. But our mission is not only to be satisfied in having these wonderful temples in our cities. There's a whole dimension, there's a whole area which many of our devotees are much less familiar or informed about, and which is also needing urgent attention. You see. In 1970, well, in the 70s, practically throughout the 70s, when Srila Prabhupada was traveling and preaching, lecturing, having conversations with so many people, on many occasions he would speak about the importance to immediately establish Varnashram colleges. Srila Prabhupada had, as an empowered acharya, a very clear vision as to what the mission of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was and how to actually execute or implement. And actually this mission is a very broad mission. I mean, it is very much in keeping with what Lord Chaitanya has instructed in every town and village. Of course, nowadays we're losing our villages very quickly. And that should be of major concern. That should be of major concern to us as a society and to devotees in general. Because especially in a place like India, losing our villages means losing our culture. Losing our villages means losing our tradition and our values. Losing our villages means losing our cows also. And losing our cows actually means, if that continues, it means losing our brahmanas, losing our brahminical culture. Our Krishna consciousness movement, our Vedic culture, is based on this brahminical culture, which is intimately connected with villages and cows. And unless some of our devotees begin to understand how important this is, and therefore how important is this fourth dimension of Srila Prabhupada's mission. I've spoken about this, of course, before here in Chaupati. I'm sure some of you were here at that time, I think last year or the year before. Srila Prabhupada's very clearly defined vision of four movements, which he has clearly described and spoken about and also demonstrated in his preaching activities. So they're all actually interconnected. They're all very closely connected. And the four of them together make a complete whole. If any one of them is missing, that whole is no longer a complete whole. So the first, we are generally, as devotees, especially in our city temples, we are generally very much familiar with, and we have developed and made it as, like, in many ways, you know, the expression, comfort zone. We have established, or we have come to accept as a comfort zone, the first three of Srila Prabhupada's movements or divisions, which make up the full vision. We are actually, just yesterday, one of your main prominent devotees here, Gauranga Prabhu, was visiting at Juhu. And I had met him before, but I had never, I had never seen him in action. I had never seen him interacting. He was interacting with a few devotees in regards to some proposals for introducing part of this fourth division. Actually, it was in terms of Kshatriya Dharma, which is a big topic in itself. And he was actually demonstrating as a Brahmana very good insight, because Brahmanas in society, their role is to actually look at things very closely and understand, okay, how to promote, how to move things forward. So our comfort zone for most of us, practically speaking, for all ISKCON temples around the world, which are in the cities, is that the first of the four that we like to do, that we're very at ease with, is chanting the holy name. What Prabhupada refers to as the Sankirtan movement. Chanting the holy name, which we do every day by chanting on Japamala, and which we do by performing kirtan. Intimately connected with this is, of course, hearing from Bhagavatam, like we're doing right now, and reading and distributing books. This is the first of the four aspects of Srila Prabhupada's mission. And we've become, actually some devotees are extremely expert with, and you know, at singing, at leading kirtans, at distributing books, at giving lectures, which is wonderful, you know, which attracts many people as well. And that's why it's there in the beginning, you know. Prabhupada, he would explain, he would tell us, you have to do like I've done. You just go anywhere, and Prabhupada actually sent people anywhere in the middle of some new country. He says, you just go somewhere, dressed as a devotee, you know, with tilak and everything, and you take a pair of kartals, and even if you're alone, you just start chanting Hare Krishna and just see what happens. So of course we know, if anybody goes anywhere and sits and starts chanting, somebody's bound to come and ask him, who are you and what are you doing? You know, I mean, people who don't know about Krishna consciousness. So this is how Lord Chaitanya began. This is how Srila Prabhupada began as well. And it remains, has to remain as well, the foundation, the holy name and books. Then from there come the second, you know, deity worship movement, Prabhupada calls it, establishing wonderful temples where those who have been attracted by the ching, 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 they can come and hear more and come and associate with those who are in our temples. So Prabhupada was very, of course, in some places Prabhupada was not always enthusiastic to establish temples because it requires a lot of time, a lot of energy has to go. Prabhupada was interested in preaching, introducing people in different ways to Krishna consciousness. So that second movement, you know, our temples, those of us especially living in our temples who have this great fortune, this privilege actually, it's a privilege to be living in a temple and to get darshan every day, wonderful darshan of the Lord, wonderful prasadam of the Lord, all these things. Then the third, which is part of the mission, is Prabhupada called it spiritual initiation movement, developing, going out of our temples, bringing people to Krishna consciousness, cultivating people, developing youth preaching programs, developing Namhata programs, Bhakti Vriksha programs, all these things. So these three are primarily Brahminical activities, because they require knowledge, understanding about the philosophy of Krishna consciousness. They require that people come up to some standard, you know, to do deity worship, or to cook for the deities, or to give Bhagavatam classes. One has to cultivate knowledge. These are primarily Brahminical activities. The fourth one, actually, the fourth aspect of this mission is is very, in some ways, elusive. It is not, we cannot so easily grasp it or identify or understand it, at least immediately. And Srila Prabhupada, of course, as we know, as we should know, he called it the classless society movement. Classless society movement in reference to Varnashram, which means actually, it means many things. It means actually going out of our cities, you see. It means not being content with our preaching in the cities, but understanding that actually the majority of people, of course that's changing around the world, majority of people are living outside of our cities. At least in India, that's still true. You know, some 70%, now it's come down, it is below 70% of people live in villages. And just a few months ago when I was in Mayapur, one devotee who happens to be the principal of the Gurukul in Vrindavan, he's been attending different conferences in regards to education, and he was hearing how in one conference by, this is a global figure that is coming up slowly, but by year 2050, the global statistics of population within the world will become 50% in the cities and 50% in the villages. Now, you know, these are just figures, but we need to understand what that means. Anyone who hasn't been to America, which is not a bad thing, will probably not know that in America, 98% of the people live in cities. 98. That's very close to 100%, isn't it? In places like Singapore, when I was there, that's more than five years ago, maybe 10 years ago, the percentage of people living in high-rise apartments in Singapore 10 years ago was 70%. 70% of the population living in high-rise apartments. Talk about becoming disconnected with the land, right? Literally. So, the whole development around the world, and this includes India as well, is going in the wrong direction, to say the least, and is having all kinds of very devastating effects on all levels of society and affecting, practically speaking, every individual. So Srila Prabhupada actually, I mean, way back in the late 60s, he started New Vrindavan project, New Vrindavan community, and which inspired, of course, many other communities to begin. And we should know that New Vrindavan was meant to give inspiration and to create a model which would be applicable to a village. Or New Vrindavan was meant to become like a village, actually. Mini village. So this brings us to a central theme, which is very important. Our Vedic culture, the Vedic culture, has always been and is meant to be as well. Primarily an agrarian-based culture where we can have a healthy Brahminical culture where, just like we're hearing, what is meant to be the standard for householders, what is meant to be the ideal relationship between husband and wife, and how society, when it begins to deviate, as is the case today, then it just creates total havoc within society. So it means that actually within our ISKCON society, it is taking us a long time to actually address this fourth aspect, this fourth division. And I just would like to share a few small things which are taking place, which will, I hope, will give you some food for thought as to how actually, Chaupati Temple, I was mentioning a few minutes ago before the class to our Braj Prem Prabhu, who has been kind enough to bring me here this morning. We have plans to visit the Wada farm later today, but actually we're going to go tomorrow morning. Chaupati Temple, by Krishna's mercy, Srila Prabhupada's mercy, and Radhanath Maharaj's mercy as well, is a little bit, we say in English, ahead of the game. It's, I would say, proactive in many ways, which is very wonderful. We need more devotees and more temples to be proactive. Proactive means one has an understanding of what needs to be done and does it. So, very different than, you know, most of our temples here in India and around the world have not taken, I would say, any major or at least serious step towards establishing communities, which, you know, has been taken up by the leadership here in at the Chaupati Temple, which is very good, and which is naturally something that for someone like myself who is involved in the ministry promoting all of that, then when we see this happening, then it's very inspiring and something that we naturally want to support in so many different ways. Within our ISKCON society, this is important for devotees to know, there's a global effort, I mean on the highest level of leadership within our society, to work out systematically. There's a whole strategy actually being worked on. We need to do that actually because our society is an international society and our society has a mandate which practically no other society has. You know, we have a very unique mandate. Our mandate is none other than to save the world. You know, that's a pretty big mandate. Yeah. Prabhupada, Srila Prabhupada, he mentioned, just to give us a little idea, that one of the main purposes of this society is to bring a complete overhaul in society, in general society. Means to bring a complete change. Means to actually revert the present ongoing trend of urbanization back to agrarian rural lifestyle. Now, most people, when you start speaking about this plan, they will say, "Sir, it is impossible. You cannot, you know, we're going this way. Everyone's going that way. All the countries, all the policies of all the major governments in the world are just going that way. And you want to go the other way? And most people think it is impossible. One very nice example, which our Fidel Castro has kindly given to us. Cuba is an example, for those who may not know, of a country, and we're talking about a country here, which was also caught up in the, you know, modern way of living by having all kinds of industrialization and motor vehicles, etc. So I don't know the details so much, but when there was, they were cut off, mercy of USA, special mercy, they were in a fix. They didn't have any more access to petrol. So what to do? They introduced a whole plan to go back to ox power. And within, I don't know, a relatively short period of time, the whole country no longer was dependent on petrol. And if I'm not mistaken, at least I read recently, Cuba, because of this, has become, if not number one, but one of the topmost in terms of organic farming. People producing, growing their own food, organic food. It means it's possible. Means they did it, you see. Prabhupada at one time, he mentioned, you know, Prabhupada was always very, quite open, frank. So one time he said, you know, we don't need cars. Stop and think about that. We don't need cars. Actually, we don't need cars. To live the kind of lifestyle we're living today, we need cars. We're living the wrong lifestyle. We're going in the wrong direction. So this is very much, in many ways, it is, actually Prabhupada, he said to a number of people, sometimes devotees, they will challenge the statement I'm about to make. I'm going to make it because I heard it from reliable sources who heard it directly from Srila Prabhupada. Not everything that Prabhupada spoke about has been, you know, recorded. So Prabhupada said 50% of our mission, of the ISKCON mission, is to establish Varnashram, which means many things, but it means primarily coming back to the Vedic norm, Vedic lifestyle. So it doesn't mean that we just, you know, close shop and, you know, leave the cities, etc., like that. These two things have to be done simultaneously, but these two things have to be done. You know, it's like, as I mentioned before, we're very much at ease. We have learned very nicely over the years, you know, how to chant the holy name. That point was being made actually by Gauranga Prabhu. He was mentioning how, you know, compared to the Christians, compared to the Muslims, we are like, you know, we are light years behind. Light years behind what they are developing, how active they are in villages, you see. Fortunately, we can make up that difference because light years is, you know, is quite a distance. There's a real urgency to actually develop this fourth aspect of Srila Prabhupada's mission, and that will only come about, and of course I won't get into very big discussion on this, But that will only come about, society can only become properly rearranged, refocused, redirected, if we have trained Kshatriyas to do that. Because society, general society, if we read Bhagavatam, if we know anything about Vedic culture, Vedic history, what do we read about in the Bhagavatam? All kinds of monarchs and kings, isn't it? And their activities. It is one of the 10 main topics. Bhagavatam has 10 main topics. That is one of them. The history of great monarchs, great kings, how they ruled based on the Vedic culture. Evam parampara praptam imam rajarshayo vidu. They were actual rajarshis. They were rajas, kings, and rishis simultaneously. Today we have no kings and no rishis, so we're in a bad shape. Isn't it? We have no qualified leaders. Qualified leader means actually king, one who knows about monarchy. Monarchy is a standard. Now we try to speak about monarchy. Try to promote monarchy, especially in the US. Monarchy has been systematically abolished. And wherever it might exist today, attempts are being made to very quickly, you know, bring people up to present day civilization, quote unquote. Civilization means democracy today. But civilization doesn't mean democracy. Civilization means what is there in the Bhagavatam. What is there in the Bhagavatam is monarchy. What is there in the Bhagavatam is varnashram. What is there in the Bhagavatam is devotional service. So therefore, Prabhupada spoke of daiva varnashrama, divine varnashrama, that varnashrama which has Krishna in the center, that varnashrama which has everyone in all orders, all spheres of life, engaged in serving Krishna. But none of this actually will happen. Prabhupada also mentioned that historically we see, unless there are kshatriyas, qualified kshatriyas leading, then and based on religious, you know, principles, on principles of dharma. So in other words, we as a society, we are mainly a brahminical society, as Prabhupada explained. But we as a society are not the ones who will govern society, isn't it? We will govern our ISKCON society. But we will not govern, we will not directly. So therefore, either those who are presently trying to govern in different countries of the world, either they have to take up to Krishna consciousness, or some of our own devotees, congregational members, any devotee, take up responsibilities. So that's, of course, a very major topic in itself. There are global initiatives which are at the recent meetings in Mayapur. 18 different global initiatives are ongoing. That means that there are 18 committees looking at different aspects. There's very serious work actually going on with our topmost devotees from around the world, and they're meeting twice a year trying to see how, you know, in which best ways Srila Prabhupada's mission can actually be taken up and fulfilled. And there's a sense of urgency actually in doing that, which is very proper as well. That sense of urgency of course, besides the very need that is there, the ongoing need, the sense of urgency has to do with many of our main leaders within the society, means Srila Prabhupada's disciples, who are all, you know, as we say, not getting younger. So there's a recognized sense of urgency on the part of the senior devotees, those who are Prabhupada disciples, to help to the fullest extent or as much as possible to arrange or arrange things in such a way that Srila Prabhupada's movement will be able to continue on nicely for the next 10,000 years as is required. And part of this global initiatives is in connection with Varnashram, and we're looking forward to actually establishing contacts and having offices as well in different temples here in India and in different countries around the world, whereby devotees can get more information about this aspect of Srila Prabhupada's mission. And it is not, actually it's for everyone to at least develop some awareness, some understanding of it, because then we can at least preach about it. And those who are preachers, those who are book distributors. And also there's a need for attracting individuals, training individuals. This will be done especially through Varnashram colleges in becoming enthusiastic. I was speaking just day before yesterday with Radhesham Prabhu in Pune. Many of you know him, of course. And he was mentioning how very, very soon, I think they're acquiring some 50 acres of land or something, and they already have a good group of people who are, you know, fired up to go and, you know, start some activities in that area. So, in a Bhagavatam class, especially on days, as I mentioned earlier, where such great exalted personalities, was it Srinivas Acharya's appearance today or disappearance? Appearance, yeah. So he was one of our most, of course, Srinivas Acharya, and I'll just very briefly, he was one of three very young and enthusiastic devotees who never actually had, you know, they came after Lord Chaitanya had disappeared. They never had direct darshan of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. But Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, by his preaching and by his mere presence, he had already, you know, wherever he had gone, what's the expression, like electrified that whole place, you know, surcharged that place with the Sankirtan mood. So when these personalities, Srinivas Acharya, Shyamananda Pandit, and Narottam Das Thakur, when they came at the height of that very intensive mood which was there, still prevalent, because Lord Chaitanya had just left. So naturally, you know, everything they heard about, everyone they met, was in connection with Lord Chaitanya and his Sankirtan mission. So they naturally became totally, fully involved and absorbed. And they went to Vrindavan, got the close association of some of the Goswamis of Vrindavan. And they were the first to embark in the mission, you see. After getting the association of the devotees in Vrindavan, various devotees, especially some of the Goswamis, who had written all of these wonderful books, which are today in our hands as, you know, Bhaktivedanta books. So they had the first copy, the original, actually original copies, which they carried, because that was the desire, that was the beginning of the mission. They had to carry these original books to Bengal, you know, because so many devotees were, who could not travel to Bengal, they were hearing so many things, that so many wonderful books have been written by Rupa and Sanatan Goswami, all the Goswamis. So the first Harinam Sankirtan party was started by these personalities. And anyway, so many stories are there. The important point is, you know, in a very similar way, Srila Prabhupada, he remained for a short time. Lord Chaitanya actually remained for a short time. 48 years is actually a very short time. Srila Prabhupada also, 11 years is a short time of introducing the mission of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And when Srila Prabhupada left in a similar way, it was, you know, book distribution was at a height, it was at its height, so to speak. Everyone was totally absorbed, not only in book distribution, but in going out wherever and, you know, starting a temple, starting Krishna consciousness. So this kind of intensity, which was there during the time of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, which was there during Srila Prabhupada's time, is something that needs to be maintained, you see. And that and that comes by understanding, more clearly understanding, more deeply understanding the inner thoughts and inner desires of all of these great personalities. So we are reminded of this very wonderful prayer by reminiscent of Srila Rupa Goswami. Sri Chaitanya Manobhistam Stapitam Jena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamahyam Dadati Swapadantikam. Let me remember, let me try to understand, let me relish the inner thoughts and the inner desires of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, who is constantly absorbed in, of course, he's absorbed, Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is absorbed mostly in Vrindavan. Mostly in Vrindavan. But let me tell you one thing, and I'll close the class on this actually. Prabhupada, he was naturally Vrindavan. Our hearts are in Vrindavan. Our consciousness, our meditation, our focus, our temples are in Vrindavan, connected with Vrindavan. And Srila Rupa Goswami wonderfully describes how the perfection of life, isn't it, and the nectar of instruction. The highest perfection of life is to one day be able to come to Vrindavan and to sit on the banks of Radhakund and Shyamakund and simply relish all of the wonderful pastimes of Radha and Krishna and all of the devotees, all of the associates of Lord Chaitanya. Srila Prabhupada explains that actually this is very wonderful. However, for our purposes, for the purposes of pleasing Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, even more desirable is taking this spirit and this atmosphere of Vrindavan, carrying this mood and this spirit of Vrindavan outside of Vrindavan, all over the world in every town and village. More pleasing to Krishna than sitting in Radhakund and Shyamakund is giving an opportunity for people all over the world to be introduced to Shyamakund and Radhakund. And therefore, Srila Prabhupada, Prabhupada is a prime example. He was right there. He was in Vrindavan. Yet he left Vrindavan to show us by example, to preach and introduce Krishna consciousness, and very much desired, and in the spirit of Lord Chaitanya also begged. Lord Chaitanya was begging people to take up to the mission, to the preaching. Shono shono Nityananda, shono Haridas, sarvatra amaragya koro aprakash, prati gori gori giya koro ibika, bolo Krishna, bhaja Krishna, koro Krishna shikha. Lord Chaitanya requested and expected, and so many fortunate souls took up that mission during the time of Lord Chaitanya, to go and knock on every house, knocking on the doors, requesting people, and going in the villages around the world. So, my humble request, actually, within a few days, I'll be like so many of our sannyasis. Sannyasis are generally, what we say, on the move, you know, moving, traveling. So I'll be visiting a number of countries specifically on this aspect or topic of Varnashram. A number of devotees from different countries are already active in this area, but a lot more activities are needed, and we hope that our devotees here in Chaupati Temple, connected with the Chaupati Temple, will continue to be proactive, as I mentioned before. And we very much need, we means the whole world needs very much devotees who have been trained up nicely in our temples. We should not, it's risky. It's a risk. It is not so easy, you know, to leave Vrindavan, to leave India, to go to America. Prabhupada took risks. So Prabhupada would explain, unless we learn to take risks for pleasing Krishna, then Krishna's mercy will not, Krishna's mercy is always there, but it will not be fully. It will not be, it will be more when we agree to take such risks. There are many things to be said. I forgot to ask. Of course, when I came here, I didn't realize that prasadam is generally served before darshan. At least I saw a lot of people taking prasadam. which means that there's less anxiety about having to go right away. At the same time, whatever classes we do give do have to come to an end at some particular point. I'd like to take any questions, if there are any, at this point. And nobody actually told me. What is that? Is that 10 to 10? Is it? Okay. Nobody told me actually what time class finishes normally. Maybe Chaupati doesn't have a normal time for classes also. Because I know some classes do go on for a long time, but in any event, my open agenda I've spoken about a little bit, and if there are any comments or any questions regarding what we have heard from Srila Prabhupada's purport or what we have spoken about, we'll be happy to try and respond. Yes, microphone is just now coming.
Hare Krishna. Thank you very much, Maharaj. I have the blessing of hearing the same topic for a second time from your lotus mouth. Maharaj, I was hearing one of Prabhupada's lectures, I mean Prabhupada's conversations.
Yes.
In which someone asked Prabhupada somewhere in US about this Varnashrama principle, that we have to establish Varnashrama system and all. Then Prabhupada said, but how in this place in America, there is no question of Varnashrama here. But I have just come here and I've been very successful in spreading the mission here. So all that you have to do is just chant and follow the four regulative principles. The rest of it will take care of itself. Something to that effect Prabhupada was telling.
Yes, yes.
Hare Krishna.
And I'll tell you something else. there are written, it's there actually in the folio. At one time, or on a few occasions actually, Prabhupada said, Kali Yuga is not possible to establish Varnashram. What to do? Something important to know and to understand. Even before going to the West, as I touched on briefly before, Srila Prabhupada already had a full, clear, complete vision and understanding of what needed to be done, how to introduce this mission of Lord Chaitanya. And Varnashram was part of it, even at that time. He even wrote in two important places, the essay of Gita Nagari, and also even before that, the essay of Gita Nagari is 1956. Even before that, in 1949, Prabhupada had put in writing his vision, his mission. It is, without any doubt, a fact that in the early days, it had to start naturally with the Holy Name, with books. In the very beginning, actually, there were no books. So, by default, we would be chanting 6, 8, 10 hours every day. That was the main activity for the devotees. Even when I joined in 74, that was still, you know, a main activity. Daily Harinam, 4 hours, many hours. Then slowly, gradually, as Prabhupada's books were being printed, BTGs, then there was a little bit less Harinam and more book distribution. The point is that Srila Prabhupada, especially in those years where book distribution really took off, so the main focus definitely was on preaching and opening temples. And, you know, New Vrindavan, I mentioned, 68, in the late 60s, was started. So in other words, Prabhupada wanted. But the main emphasis of the preaching and the main, I mean, the fever was surrounded or connected with book distribution and opening temples. Varnashram at that time, I would say Prabhupada played it down. He spoke about it, and sometimes he would even say, well, you know, just chant. And that is also true. You know, the more we chant, the more we will become purified in consciousness, and the more we'll be able to understand how Varnashram is meant to be implemented. It works like that also. Yeah. So chanting, you know, because Varnashram definitely in Kali Yuga, I mean, forget about it. I mean, in Kali Yuga, forget about spirituality normally. Because Kali Yuga is for the sinful. Kali Yuga is for those who are deeply sunk fully under tamagun and rajagun. And the only reason why there is some ray of hope in this Kali Yuga is, as Prabhupada explained, because of Lord Chaitanya. Because of Lord Chaitanya's Sankirtan movement. Otherwise, there's no hope. And within that Sankirtan movement of Lord Chaitanya, not only Srila Prabhupada, but other acharyas spoke about some, okay, may not be the exact replica of what we read about, but the basic will be there. We cannot, you see, this is something very important to understand. Activities of bhakti are meant to be, and they are, eternal activities of the spirit soul, isn't it? And because most people who come in the material world forget that they are spirit souls, therefore they cannot be happy because they don't know about devotion. So that is one constant. That is one constant. The other constant which we need to understand is that on the material level, Krishna has arranged a system or a way, which is varnashram, which is also a constant. Constant means it is meant to be there without changes, at least the basic principles. So the basic principles means that there has to be Brahmana, there has to be Kshatriya, there has to be Vaishya, there has to be Shudra within the system of varnashram and along with the ashrams. You know, Brahmachari up to Sannyas ashram. But according to time, place and circumstance, that may take on different, you know, but the basic principles have to be there, must be there. And this is the challenge that we have as a society, because basically what you are mentioning is very often an argument that many devotees give, that Maharaj, and actually many of Prabhupada's disciples, those who were discussing with Srila Prabhupada in many of these conversations or exchanges on the topic of varnashram, they were making the same point, but Srila Prabhupada, you told us, all we have to do is chant Hare Krishna. And that's it. Why, you know, varnashram seems a little complicated. And then Prabhupada was making this point, and he explained on many occasions, who is there able to just chant Hare Krishna? Where are those personalities like Haridas Thakur who don't need actually varnashram? They can just be 22 hours a day sitting in front of Tulsi Devi and totally absorbed. So on many occasions and in many ways, Srila Prabhupada explained that even as devotees, one doesn't become a Mahajan overnight. So therefore, many of our devotees, Vaishnavas, those modes are all pervading in the material world. Material world is made up of the modes of material nature. Even we take up devotional service as Vaishnavas, it takes, I mean, it's not so easy to completely eradicate these modes. So therefore, it is important to work within the system of varnashram. And this is, I'll just mention that as something very important, which was written by one of our foremost of acharyas, Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur, who very clearly states that for Vaishnavas, for those who are Vaishnavas, the safest place and the easiest way for them to advance as Vaishnavas, as devotees, is within the system of varnashrama. This is very clearly stated, which means that even though we are practicing Vaishnavas, we can best, more easily, more quickly advance as Vaishnavas by respecting and following and working within the system of Varnashram. And the last point he makes, actually, Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur, is that when we do that, keeping in mind that all of our activities are meant to please Krishna, Daiva Varnashrama, all of those activities within Varnashrama become bhakti, become devotional service. So we, I hope it addresses your question a little bit. So I would like to thank the devotees very much. Jai Srila Prabhupada ki, Jai Samasta Gaur Bhaktavrinda ki, Gaura Premanandi. Hare Krishna.